Welcome to Back to Your Roots, a podcast that provides insight into all things farming, financing, and farm life, guiding you back to your roots.
Thanks for joining us again on Back to Your Roots. I'm your host, Chris Griffin.
And I'm Jordan Turnage. Guys, thank you for coming in and listening to us again. Today, we've got the owner and operator of Triple G Farms, Mr. Darren Grogan, in the office with us. He is a Carlisle County native, a farmer first and foremost, a member of the River Valley Ag Credit Board as one of our directors. I think a renowned aviator as well, owner of several different hats. Thank you, Mr. Darren, for coming in this morning. We appreciate you coming in.
Well, certainly. Thank you for having me. I've got to say it's an honor to be here. I haven't missed one of these podcasts. I've enjoyed them very much, and you guys do an excellent job. So just to get to be a part, I'm an avid podcast listener, so just to get a chance to sit on this side of the microphone is pretty interesting.
We appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
We won't let that go to our head that we do definitely have, at least we know we have one listener, so that's a positive.
But, I got to tell you, I was very intimidated coming in here because I told my wife leaving, I said, you know, I feel at a disadvantage because I said, these guys have these deep voices that were made for radio.
Well, some people tell me I have a face for radio.
Well, that's what she told me. She said, don't worry. She said, you've got a face that was made for radio. So I felt a lot better.
You know, and the sad part is nobody actually knows. If people don't know me, they don't know I'm a little guy. So I got a deep voice, but I'm a little guy. So it all worked out. It all evened out. So we're fine. So
there's a reason this is an audio way of doing things, not so much a visual.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Darren, we're really, you know, we're grateful you're here and taking time out of your day. But, you know, for a lot of our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about your background, your farm, your operation, how long you've been a member of RVAC, and just kind of the various, I know you're busy with a lot of boards and kind of the different boards that you serve on currently.
So, yes, I've been a member of River Valley as far as back as I can remember. Mm-hmm. I really don't know how many years, but basically all of my adult life we have used, you know, starting out Jackson Purchase and now River Valley for our capital needs along the way. And certainly River Valley has been an excellent partner in that growth along the way as we've grown many times over during that time. So that's been good. But a little bit about us. We're a family operation. We do corn, wheat, soybean, row crop operation, fairly large in scale. But Triple G consists of my dad, my brother Brian, myself, and actually now my son Connor is back on the farm after completing his college education.
That's great. Where'd he go to college?
He went to Murray State with a business ag major.
Awesome. Yes, sir. Part of that Hudson Ag group.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we've got you in here. We didn't rope you down or anything. You came in voluntarily, and we appreciate that. You and I have had some run-ins. Our last kind of, we bumped into each other at the Paducah Mall, and we were just kind of going over, getting ready for this year, and we started talking about plans, and we got to talking about planting and what the best time to start that was, and that's what kind of sparked this to help us come in here. We're going to talk predominantly about Precision Ag today. It just seems like you're always up to date on the latest and greatest when it comes to advances in agriculture. And today we just want to come in here and take a chance to pick your brain on precision agriculture. So if you would just tell us and the listeners what precision agriculture is to you, in your opinion.
Sure. Well, precision agriculture pretty much relates to anything that's done in a spatial manner. And so, in other words, what I'm saying there is, if whatever operation you happen to be doing within ag, whether that's soil sampling, planting, harvesting, anything you do, if that particular machine knows where in the world it is while it's doing it, then you've got precision ag. Basically, as a definition, that's being done. Now, it kind of sort of today it's brought into broader hat and pretty much, you know, expounds to be all of the technology within agriculture.
Yes, because I feel like, as you know, we're in a market now, in a global market, where we're having to find ways to feed and clothe and produce energy for more people on less acres, and all at the time of that, trying to keep a smaller footprint, carbon footprint. Now that's the big thing now, too. So precision ag, as far as finding the best way to target and apply things, it's the name of the game right now, I would say.
Well, if you look at what we do as far as our segment in agriculture, I mean, we're producing a commodity. So, meaning we can't brand name every kernel of the corn we produce, can't have a little Triple G Farms logo on it, and we get some kind of premium for that. So, with that said, the only way you survive in this industry and have a competitive advantage is through efficiency. Mm-hmm. And precision agriculture is a big part of that efficiency. I mean, you can work efficiency when you talk about it. You can work that from two sides. You know, it can be from the income side or the expense side, but precision ag plays big in both of those roles. So we have to remain in the top tier in efficiency among our peers within the industry to be successful.
Yes. That's actually what I was going to ask. You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say about efficiency and ask you about that because I know, you know, from a business standpoint, I don't care what business it is, right? I mean, the more efficient, you know, you can, you know, your income coming in and your cash flow going out and your expenses, you know, I would feel like that would make your operation a much more solid operation.
Absolutely.
And hopefully make the numbers look better at the end of the year.
Certainly.
And so I know we had, I forgot the guy's name of our, it's fleet in my brain, but from Hudson, and he was talking about some of the advances. Oh, and
Matt Ramage.
And we were talking about some of the advances and you know, even from spraying to different things. I mean, if you're not overspraying, you're not spraying a spot twice or anything. I mean, all of that adds up over the course of the year, I would assume.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
absolutely.
Those little, I mean, as small as it can be, you pile that up on top of each other over and over again, it makes a big difference at the end of the year. So
absolutely. I've got this saying that about managing the, especially on managing the expenses, you know, big gaping holes don't sink ships.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because everyone knows the big gaping hole is there. It's the little cracks.
It's the little cracks.
For sure. About 1,000 cuts.
My wife's a business owner, and I hear about it. I she's not a farmer, but she's a business owner, so I still see those business returns, and it's those little things here and there that add up.
Yes, you know, you're talking about spraying and some of those things, some advances over the years where we've added technologies, and you know, you just gain 5%.
Yeah.
Is a large number when you apply scale to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And on the opposite side of that too, though, is we're trying to make sure that we can stretch these chemistries for crop production and crop protection as long as we can. So with going out there on that first trial run and making sure that we're hitting every acre as best we can, that first go around, it's not only saving you for that season, it's saving you exponentially down the road as well, as far as being able to stretch, you know, like what we've ran into in the past 10 years with Roundup technology, pretty much being, you know, we used it up and now we've tried to find new ways of chemistries to attack Palmer pigweed and henbit and water hemp, all of those pesky weeds that we have to deal with every year. With us having that triple action technology on a lot of the chemicals and seed that we have on there, it's just, there's so many moving parts, and we don't know how long that time frame is. So I'm sure that that's something that you guys as farmers have to always keep in mind. You know, we want to make sure we're saving money on going out there one time, hitting it right on spraying. As I can go back to what I talked about earlier with holding down that carbon footprint, saving yourself on diesel because gas is not cheap. And then chemicals are not cheap right now. And then paying for them is not cheap right now.
Absolutely. Well, in that, it may seem hard to believe, but actually precision agriculture plays a big role in allowing those chemistries to last longer for us. Because one thing that builds resistance faster than anything in a crop is an under application of you give a weed or a grass a less than lethal dose of a chemistry, and it opens it up to produce a resistance to
that's
that.
That's interesting.
So, well, now we have, and you take a sprayer, say it has 120 foot boom, and you make a turn, you know, if that sprayer is doing a constant rate across that 120 foot boom, the outside radius of that boom in a turn is moving much faster than the inside radius, and you're giving an overdose on the inside of the turn versus an underdose on the outside of the turn, and now we have technology to keep that rate constant throughout the radius of that turn.
And droplet size.
And that is keeping that resistance at bay.
That's interesting about the resistance because it's almost like an antibiotic for, you know, if you don't go, if your child gets sick and you don't give them the full, you know, 10 days or 13 days, you stopped at midstream, well, you've given that whatever it is they have just a little bit. Well, now the next time they take that antibiotic, it's probably not going to be as efficient. So
exactly.
It's pretty interesting.
So that's just one of those places that precision ag comes into play that the layperson would not even realize.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I learned something about you today before I came in here. So you were talking about Hudson. So you're a big John Deere guy. You're a green man from what I've heard. But something that's pretty neat that the listeners may want to learn about is you're pretty heavily involved in a lot of John Deere testing equipment. So a lot of the stuff that maybe hasn't been introduced, or they need to find some farmers that are willing to kind of stick their neck out and try something a little bit different. So you kind of talk about that and some of the neat things that you've seen over the past year or two. I don't know. So, I don't know how much. I don't know what they call it. The confidentiality of it. But
I may be scared of who's listening. but no, we've been very blessed in being in a position and having a network within our industry to get to be involved, get to see some technologies that are way out in the future, get to be involved, and even provide input on those technologies. However, I can't speak to anything that's not currently available. I can make some generalities on where I think things are going. But I will say this in light of that. One thing, if you notice how fast technology is moving today. Mm-hmm. And one thing that has aided that in moving, you know, we deal with companies that are just larger than life. I mean, you take some of these companies, it's just unbelievable how large they are. When you have a company that size, I mean, I know you guys have probably seen it with River Valley growing. I mean, as you grow, there's a certain amount of bureaucracy that has to be present. Mm-hmm. And with that, things, the flow of information through the company tends to slow down sometimes if you're not careful. Well, a lot of these companies have realized this and sort of pulled back the veil, if you will. Mm-hmm. And allowed access from their mid-level management to the customer so that that information is free-flowing directly between those two. And it's been invaluable for two reasons. Number one, it pushes technology further, faster than it ever has before. But also, it gets influenced by a cross-section of the customer base at a direct level with the actual engineer
in the trenches.
Yeah. In the trenches. That's right. So it is just, I think through that, as customers, we're getting better products that's more suited for what we're doing at a faster rate.
So maybe I know there's things you can't tell us maybe that are on the horizon, but in your opinion, what are some advances that have happened that are there now, right, that are made available to farmers that you feel like have really impacted your overall efficiency
and the last 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. So if you go back, the main things that I see and what I think the future is going to, too, is all going to be data driven. Mm-hmm. You know, precision agriculture started really of any scale in the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. And we started in 1999. And it really started as just a data collection. And, you know, we were all collecting data. We put yield monitors on our combines. Mm-hmm. We were pulling soil samples. We were doing these things. And I think for a long time, we had a lot of neat maps, and this is neat, but we didn't really know what we were doing with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. A lot of data, but not how to apply.
A lot of data.
Basically.
That's right. Yeah. So now, as we get to where we're getting a data set that is reaching critical mass as far as what we can do with it, We're actually, and I can talk about that in a few minutes, we're ushering in what I call the third era of agriculture. And so we are using this data to cut and slice it in such ways. To be an example, field readiness is one thing that's coming out of data. And this is an aggregated data. So with this, we're getting big rains right now. We're supposed to be wet for the next few days, 2 to 3 inches of rain today. Mm-hmm. Monday morning, I can go sit down at my computer and I can pull up a map of the entire operation, and I can have a score across every single field we have. And those scores will look like 60, 80, 30, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And what that is using aggregated data from around the country. And it takes, when you've had this much rain and following that by this many days of dry with this much wind, with this much heat and these kind of soil types, in this field, 80% of the machines would be moving around the country in those right conditions, now. 30% here. So without driving 30, 40 miles, I can pull up my computer, look at a map and say, I can send the guys here at 7 o'clock in the morning without waiting noon to check everything. Go here and work. You can't go there. Let's move this piece of machinery to there.
That's neat.
That's incredible.
Crazy.
Yeah, because that way you're not just sitting and waiting, because you only got so much daylight.
That's right.
And that's what it comes down to is utilizing as much sunlight as we can between now and harvest for these crops to grow. And that's something I didn't know we had out there. That's really neat.
Yeah.
So breaking down with what precision ag means to farmers. Could it be a difference in profitability again, or the alternative kind of better decision making, better analyzation? Kind of going off of what, kind of piggybacking off of what we talked about before this, just kind of as yourself, you sitting in the driver's seat, can you kind of tell us in the last years of you utilizing this, where you really see the profitability in things?
Sure. So what I alluded to earlier, talking about a new era in agriculture, you know, you can identify the eras of agriculture back. If you look back in the old times, you know, you see the old farmer with the mule or whatever, the mule and the plow or whatever, you can identify that as sort of the art, the era of art of agriculture. And those, at that time, agriculture was an art that was passed down from generation to generation. And, you know, we've all heard the old timers say things like, you plant corn when the oak leaves are the size of a squirrel's ear. And some of those things, you know, they use those things. They passed it down generation by generation. You know, the old farmer may not be able to understand why he knows that it's okay to plant corn today, but he could just look at the dirt and tell what was right, what was wrong. Look at the signs out in the natural world and say, okay, this is good. After that, we began to better understand plant science, soil science, all that. And we really got in firmly entrenched. And I think largely we still are there in the era of science. You know, we do use high level sciences to make decisions throughout the crop season. But that's where we are, but that's not where we're going. We're going to the math. You know, I mentioned earlier we're collecting all this data, and once the data set gets large enough, we can use math for everything. To put it to your guys' point, what you would understand, you think about an ag score alone for crop decisions. You think about a model for every potential operation that we would, as a farm, consider doing. Imagine a model that would spit out a binary decision with no preconceptions about what it wanted to do or what it didn't want to do. So, taking the emotion out of decisions and taking the emotions. So planting, we have data right now about planting dates. You know, it's easy to get influenced. Well, my neighbor is planting. I should be planting.
Get the itch.
But when the model tells you,
How
bad do you want to plant?
Yes.
And you say, well, I want to plant. How much yield are you willing to give?
It's hard for me not to listen to this conversation and think about, you hear about analytics all the time in sports. All these coaches are using analytics now, right? So used to, they're like, you know, most coaches are like, we're never doing that. Now it's like, well, the analytics say X percentage is, this is the decision that needs to be made. So
this is the money
they don't
ball.
Want to make it. But
this is the money ball of agriculture.
I mean, it's, exactly. And really, honestly, in sports, that's where kind of that started. But you hear all the time now. I mean, used to it was kind of a little quirky, and now like it's all the time. All these coaches are like, well, the analytics say this, the analytics say that. It's a little different for you guys. I mean, all you're saying is you're looking at, taking in the numbers, the system is analyzing those, and giving you the best options for what needs to be done based on those probabilities at
right.
the end of the day.
Well, here's the way I look
at it.
We're
taking the emotion out of it. That's,
exactly.
That's the big part.
Exactly. Well, you're quantifying what was typically qualified.
Yeah.
And I put it like this. When I'm talking to anyone about this, when a good poker player or whatever walks into a casino in Las Vegas, they're walking in and they're planning on taking a calculated risk. Hey, I'm a good player. I've had this experience in the past.
Yes.
And based on the past, I feel like I can expect this outcome. So they're taking a calculated risk. That's what we're doing in agriculture today. They've only got one major problem. The house has a mathematical fact.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that's where this data and precision ag is taking us, to mathematical fact. It's predictive analytics. And basically what it means is, if you have enough past, and that's what we're doing with this data set, if you have enough past, you can accurately predict the future.
Yes.
And the more past you have, the more past data you have, you get your margin of error smaller and smaller and smaller. So what the casinos learn, you know, if you, from what I understand, if you go and win big, the first thing they're going to want you to do is, hey, let's comp you for another night.
Yeah, they want you to get it
because,
back.
Because they know, as a mathematical fact, the only way that they lose is if you don't play long enough.
That's right.
Well, that's what we're ushering in agriculture, that there may be some short-term hiccups, but over time, these models will be right.
Well, it's kind of like our borrowers. We have the ability to come up with a probability of default, and those numbers are based on your income, your credit score, your debt, how much your total monthly obligations are, everything, right?
Exactly.
Their equity percentage. And so there's numbers that go into that. So we know, okay, well, this person is a high-risk borrower based on these over. Now, like you said, there may be unforeseen hiccups that come up short-term, but we're looking at a long-range probability of default for
Absolutely.
That borrower.
And that's why we ask for our members to provide multiple years of tax returns.
Yeah.
And I would guess you probably run into situations where when you say this person, you know, when in so many ways you say, hey, this is a high-risk situation, they probably find it surprising for some reason because the difference in these, these models, the models you're using, you know, if you're using an ag score alone, it doesn't have emotion tied to it. You know, we do so many things in business where we have so much emotion. We try to keep emotion out of what we do. We try to make business decisions.
Yeah.
But I know when I'm running certain tests out on the farm and I have to battle keeping that to be honest, because there's oftentimes an outcome that I would like to see.
Yes. Yeah.
And you have to check that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that I'm sure you get into that too. Well, that's what I'm talking about with this modeling, that it's binary.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it will be right.
I could talk about this for a long time, actually.
I mean,
just being honest,
we all, you so, always, and
Shay knows me.
I mean, you're a man of faith, and that's what it takes to start that initial, to plant that seed. But you're giving yourself in the long run the best chance for yourself between now and for your son and generations going ahead. And
sure,
there will be years, like the next question I was going to ask, and we see, I'm sure we'll see farmers with this changing technology. Do you see it as there'll be points of stress, but for sure, we would have to say that this is going to be helpful down the road. We're just going to have to deal with the growing pains.
Absolutely. I think there are some out there that probably hates to see this ushered in. And I get that. You know, there is a lifestyle aspect to agriculture without a doubt. And, you know, for an individual, especially if they're toward the latter part of their career, and enjoying that lifestyle, would probably see this as a negative. But, you know, I was thinking about, as we was thinking about the title of this and talking about precision agriculture, and I almost chuckle that we can almost drop the precision. It's just agriculture anymore. Yeah. It's not, this is, in my opinion, it's not negotiable.
It's not a quirky thing anymore, I would feel.
No,
like.
That's it's right. Almost, it's not an outlier. Yeah. No, it's that's right. Outlier. It's just, it's where we are.
Yes.
And where
it's
we have
to be. It's the tip of the spear.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, whether it was, you know, I've been here for almost 2 years. I was at another lending institution previously. And I know even on the lending side, you know, we have a lot of technology that rolls out and things change, and things are changing. I mean, rapidly, I feel like. And so I think you run into it with farmers. You have maybe people that are a little more adapt a little more quickly and are a little more open. And then other people are like, I don't really like this. And then, but it's kind of like, at some point, it's like, well, we got to do it. So we're doing it. We're pulling the Band-Aid off. And so I know you probably deal with that with a lot of the farmers that you know. It's probably, you've got some that are a little more resistant. And
that's right.
Others that are a little more progressive and okay, kind of taking a chance and doing something new. And
right.
some in the middle. So,
yeah. And there's not a right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, there are lots of successful operations that I'm sure that's not using this and can probably end their career profitably and successfully without doing it. But there are some, it just depends what way you want to operate, what scale you want to operate, and those things. But largely, I think it's going to be necessary in the future. I mean, there's no doubt that as we move forward, as you know, agriculture is not unique in this. No matter what, I mean, you guys fight it every day with competition in the marketplace. Oh, yeah. That, you know, there's always someone that's willing to work cheaper than you are. Well, agriculture is no different. And the only way we can afford to work cheaper is to become more efficient. And run more scale.
Yeah.
And precision agriculture is a huge part of that.
Somebody might do that, but I'm going to call that lender and I'm going to start doing some snooping. You asked Shay about that. So I did that the other day. So I'm not scared to make a phone call. I was like, I don't believe they're offering that. So
I know sometimes, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, but
everybody thought that was hilarious.
You mean a customer would try to get you down on a rate by exaggerating.
I'm pretty competitive. I don't like losing. So I was like, I just picked up the phone. I said, I'm calling. I'm buying it out.
Sometimes you got to do a little bit of a sniff test.
I did a little snooping.
Going down rabbit holes with folks.
A little.
Don't always take the fox's word for it in the hen house.
Yeah. So
I will say that, like, when we're talking about this, to me, it sounds like we mentioned Moneyball, and I'm a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan, and they're in a new era right now of taking on analytics, and they've seen managers come and go that were of the old style. And I think that's one of the big sales of all the guys that they have on the staff right now. We're not going to swap over here to sports or anything. That's my other podcast I have. But like Ole Marmol and all those guys, they are data analytic driven. And that's just the way that this is going right now. And just trying to generalize it for the listeners out there that, like we said earlier, this isn't a niche area in agriculture. It maybe would have been, like, say, in 99 when we started going. You know, like I worked for Tennessee Farmers Co-op out of college, and we had a very small precision ag program, and it really was just them doing fertilizer rates, you know, just figuring out where things needed to be spread with variable rates. But now we've seen it with variable planting and like we talked about earlier with crop protection on spraying. This is the direction that this is going. And we're certainly not all out here saying, like, you know, if you don't jump on, you're going to get behind. But eventually, you know, the way the plow is just going to change a little bit different.
I'll have to correct you a little bit there, Jordan, because it's not where we're going. It's where we've been.
Yes. Yeah, I 100% agree. You know, just so these folks know, like, the train's already left the station.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, so Dr. Brandon at my Rotary Club, he came and spoke and did a presentation there and was talking about some automated
autonomous.
He actually had a he showed a video, and it was showing where he had a, you know, it was only, I think, maybe 10 rows, or it wasn't super huge, but, you know, it basically could be controlled remotely, and it was the craziest thing ever. But that's something that's on the, you know, it seems, you know, I think 20 years ago, if we thought the way our phones are now, probably you're like, well, that wouldn't have been possible, but it's here it is. So it's probably not that far away, honestly.
It's actually here working now.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
It's really, really neat.
In fact, I've seen it run several years ago.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, I do have some thoughts. I think you're going to see a lot of autonomy, you know, starting now along. Do I think you see a lot of it in our particular area? I think it's further out than we might think.
Yeah.
Cost of that has to be.
Well, yeah, that's it. So
the initial cost, I guess.
So I was with a company up in a certain place looking at a certain piece of equipment, you know, and that's one thing they ask is when would our farm adopt such technology? And I answered that with a question. I said, when did the mule get replaced by the tractor? And that was the day that it became cheaper to operate the tractor than it did the mule. That's where it's driven. Now the reason why I think it's a little farther out here, you know, a lot of people would say, oh yeah, we've got all these hills, we've got irregular shaped fields. No, that's not the reason. This technology will run there.
Yeah.
You know, you go somewhere like on a vegetable farm in the Salinas Valley of California or San Joaquin or something like that, you know, you're going to see a labor rate of probably somewhere in the neighborhood of one man per 25 acres.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're running one man for about 1,200 acres.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the economy of implementing that technology becomes much more difficult.
Your labor cost per acre is obviously is much smaller. It's much cheaper.
It's much smaller.
And smaller.
And so you have to begin to think about things. The technology is here and available for the machines to run themselves. That's not the problem. The problem becomes, how do you logistically manage this machine when it's running? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't do any good to take a person out of the machine if it takes two people to provide yeah. products for that machine yeah. and logistics.
Yeah.
To keep it where it needs to be. So you haven't gained anything at that
yeah.
point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I guess that's, you know, kind of looking at the other side of it. You know, I know we've talked a lot about a lot of the positives of Precision Ag, but what do you feel like are maybe some of the disadvantages currently, or what you see as some disadvantages with Precision Ag?
You know, the main disadvantages I see with it are there's a lot of cool technologies out there. There's technologies that provide excellent ROAs, but provided you have enough scale,
mm-hmm.
you know, for individuals who don't have the scale, you can't, you know, if you farm 500 acres, you can't justify spending an extra $100,000 on a planter.
Yeah.
It doesn't yes. matter what the returns
doesn't make sense.
Can't, the yeah. margins can't be wide enough mm-hmm. to make that pay. So that's the difficulty. It just takes a certain amount of scale to implement a lot of this technology.
I really feel like I talked about earlier, we've just kind of hit the tip of the spear
yeah.
on this. And I just hope for listeners out there that they notice now that, not knocking them, but it's not your grandpa's game anymore.
No.
And I hope our listeners know and appreciate now how much goes into an educated decision for our farmers out there to know when, what, how, why, and where to plant and farm. And so I think we've had a great discussion. I'd love to have you come back in here and go some more over this. This
love
was
to.
Absolutely fascinating. Mr. Darren, we thank you so much for coming in here today. We appreciate you coming in here and being a part of the podcast and being a real proponent of our podcast. We appreciate you going out there and preaching the word for us. Yep. And we thank you so much for all that you do as a director to the association and what your operation does to feed and clothe and give energy to the world. You know, it's like I always talk about how as a kid growing up, you just always kind of think about what's going on in your county. But as I've gotten older and gotten more into noticing markets, and I feel like it's grown exponentially in the past 20 years as well, it's just how you have to maintain always knowing not just what your neighbor's doing, but you have to know what's going on in South America, China, the BRIC countries out there. And yeah. being able to focus, and I think the big proponent that you've talked about in this and going forward is with this third era of agriculture, taking the emotion out of it and being more math and analytical driven, it's only going to be a shot in the arm one that gets involved in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you guys are going to even notice it on your end as far as from a lending standpoint when
yeah.
you see, you know, operations become more profitable because better decisions being made by the modeling, more accurately depicting where the crop's at throughout the crop year. Imagine with these technologies, imagine, you know, when someone walks into your office and asks for a loan, first thing you're going to do is ask for a balance sheet.
yeah.
What if that guy could give you a balance sheet on his crop
yeah.
at any given time? What mm-hmm. that snapshot, this is where I am today based on as a percentage of actual production history. You know, think of the things, the in-season decisions that you could assist in being made. Hey, you know, this thing is running a little short. We're gonna switch from an aggressive mindset toward the crop to a conservation of inputs or we're going to shift from a miserly approach to the inputs to say, hey, we can shoot for the moon here. This mm-hmm. crop's going to be better, you know.
Yeah. The sky's the limit.
Well, I mean, you know, as we wrap it up, I mean, the main thing, and this is more of a joke, I mean, the main thing, I've learned a lot about precision ag. I've learned a lot about you. But the one thing I took away from this is I know we have one listener on our podcast, and I know it's
absolutely
you. We have an avid listener. We have a loyal listener. And it's Mr. Grubbins.
I may not listen to this one because I'm not sure if I can stand to listen to my voice for that.
Then we'll have to check our listenership and make sure you weren't the only one. Because if you don't listen, then you are the only one. So,
I think only ones I've heard, I think, are you and my mom. So I appreciate that.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, as always, guys, thank you so much for listening to us on the Back to Your Roots podcast. For Chris, I'm Jordan. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Your Roots, where we dish the dirt on all things ag. Be sure to never miss an episode by following and subscribing. While there, leave us a review about what you want to hear next. Stay in the know between episodes by following us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and TikTok. For more resources, go to our website at rivervalleyagcredit.com.